This is the Order of Battle. Welcome back, community. The Order of Battle is a conversation between a couple friends about toys, predominantly G.I. Joe, and other fun things in our collector culture. We welcome you to be part of that conversation. So this time on the Order of Battle, Joel and I invited our friend Kickley along. You guys know Kickley. He's been doing a lot of toy art for our community for the past couple years. He was at Joe Fest last year, set up next to Ron Rudat, across the way from Larry Hama. I hit record and we started chatting, and in the mix of it all, I forgot to do an intro. So this is us midway through our conversation. This wasn't meant to be an interview, it was just us hanging out. But as you hear, Kickley goes deep on the topic of art. It's fun. We hope you enjoy it. Let's get into it. How is the bike in hand?
The bike is cool. To me, I just see, what is it, Akira? A little bit of that. It's like a generic anime bike, I would say.
Like, looking at it up close, like, it doesn't remind me of Kaneda's bike at all. But in the pictures, it always did.
I mean, it's cool. It's got rubber tires. The steering works. I mean, in terms of a toy, like, I think this gimmick is great for a kid.
Well, those clip-on blasters, are those pegs the same size as the trooper pegs?
Yep. Yeah, it's just another gun.
Then A would love that, yeah.
It's cool. If I was a kid, this would be my shit. I would put every figure on this and ram it around the house. I think it's cool that classic color Baroness came with a bike, and then we're going to get the one with the purple highlights. It's a good toy. It's solid. It doesn't feel cheap.
It doesn't look as cheap, you showing it in hand, as it did to me in all the pictures. In the pictures, it looked super cheap, but in hand here, it looks more solid and less like Akira.
This is probably the highlight, this little like color gradient in the windshield.
That's a weird detail to add, but I mean, it's neat.
Yeah, it's a weird paint app that I'll take, just that little green translucent burst in there.
Why didn't they make the black?
Oh, the recon sled?
Yeah, why didn't they make the black Cobra version of that?
You made a black Cobra version of that.
I know. It works better as a Cobra vehicle.
I never liked the sled, even when my cousin had it as a kid.
You know, it's cool looking on the packaging. It looks cool, and then you put the figure in it. And I hate that. Same thing with the Havoc, where the two people fit inside that canopy type on the front. Their faces are down, so they can't look up. That was always frustrating to me if you get something like that.
Yeah, if it had been recessed a little bit where their heads were up.
Yeah, if it just would have, you bend their knees and they stick up and their heads are looking at least somewhat forward. Or you put something there where their head goes into like a goggle type thing, so they're viewing out a camera or something. You know, something that just, this is playability and my imagination can work with this.
I could see if it was like a submarine type vehicle, you know?
Yeah. You watch the cartoon and stuff, you see how they're riding it. So it's always kind of disappointing that it's like, this is not the way it should be. I like that hovering thing out the back. I always like the hovering vehicle. That was pretty cool.
I'm always into any sort of like escape pod or secondary breakoff vehicle.
I guess I never really was, because none of my favorite vehicles have that. But then, as an adult, some of my favorite vehicles are like the Hammerhead and the Bug, which both have that.
You're trying to make up for last time.
I have more than made up for that. My collection is well beyond what I had and what I wished for as a kid.
A's got a premium collection. I don't know what else he could wish for, but I better not say that on camera.
He'll find something. Well, I've asked him already to give me a Christmas list. Because it's not like what he wants is at Target or Walmart. What he wants is stuff that I have to hunt and find, use our community for. So I start asking him in September and early October for Christmas lists, even though his birthday is at the end of August. So it's like, birthday, what do you want for Christmas?
Well, I'm thinking the Argentina figures, maybe some Brazil figures.
Yeah, that's exactly probably what he wants, Mexican boxed figures.
UK Tiger Force, you know, the easy stuff.
Well, that, and because he's a collector kid, he doesn't have to wait till Christmas to get things. So it's all the time. a couple weekends ago, they had this toy show in Trinity, Alabama. There's a toy shop called Total Nostalgia, and they wanted to run this thing. There's maybe 6 to 10 vendors, but all of them came heavy. So there was a ton of great stuff. You know, Destro's Toy Den had the most amount of G.I. Joe, but there was everything. And while we were there, A went around and helped people fix their displays where they put the wrong figures with equipment or the wrong figure with a vehicle or the wrong missiles on a vehicle. And then a couple of people were shopping and he was telling them the name and the year and whether or not the figures were complete as they were going through bins at Toy Den. He did all this work. A couple of people hooked him up with some things. And then he wanted the Rhino, the blue one. I only know about it because you hipped me to it. He saw it, knew what it was from looking at Kavanaugh's books and Yojo. He went nuts and they worked out a price without me. This is the monster I've created.
Did he make the comparison to the mask vehicle or is it just G.I. Joe in his head?
I don't know if he's made that connection or not, but he hasn't spoken about that connection.
The connection is just from the fans. I mean, it's clearly a mask vehicle. A helicopter shoots out of an armored vehicle. Did he notice that the foot pegs are actually vintage size?
Yes, because right now he has Wild Bill and Airborne in the copter, Clutch is driving, Rock and Roll is in the front shotgun seat, Cover Girl is in the back machine gun turret hatch. In the troop carrier positions are Duke and then the rest of the 83 line.
Awesome. That was kind of my big complaint with that vehicle when I got it finally, because I had built up so much hype in my brain for it. And then I realized that all the foot pegs are for vintage. And also the copter is fine for modern figures, but the rest of it is a pretty tight fit for the 4-inch figures.
What about the black and gray one?
Yeah, so basically that was the first version. It was from the DTC line, and then they just brought it forward because people loved it into the ROC.
I got you. So I guess what's missing is the driver's gun.
Okay, not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
It's the same as one of the 25th Beachheads gun.
That figure's already in the box with the rest of the modern figures.
Not surprised.
And then when we left there, we went over to Tuscumbia, Alabama. What a name. One of our buddies from the Facebook community, CLP, he and his fiance moved to Alabama and started a toy shop called Collector's Exchange, like X-Change, like X-Men. And they've got a ton of different things. The shop was a really cool design. And while we were in there, because A knows them, he went upstairs and played drums, which I sent you a video of, and then helped Clinton do a couple auctions or whatever before we had to finally like jump back on the road and leave. The whole time I was out of town doing that, you know, you were in the woods, Kickley. Like, you've actually been in the woods more than you haven't, because it feels like I've only talked to you 4 times this month.
I was in the woods. It's just relaxing. That's about it. I finished the MOTU book. That was a solid month. And then end of May, the state fair canceled, which is kind of a bummer. And so I started painting from my sketchbooks that I've kept over the years of when I went to the state fair. Just I always wanted to kind of see if I could take sketches that I took from my sketchbooks and just turn them into paintings like painters of the past would do. So it was kind of a challenge. And plus, I was kind of bummed out because I really like the state fair because I normally go there. It's like a 2-week event. And instead of being in my studio all day drawing, I go there and draw people and eat and draw people. It's a fun time.
Do you do the rides?
No. I draw the rides, but I don't go on them. I was kind of bummed out, so I started painting one, and then I kept going. And then at a certain point, I thought, wow, this might make for a good, like a gallery show. It quickly turned to, no, this is going to be a book. So I just kept painting, and I think it was like 80 paintings total. That was 2 months solid of just painting 2 paintings a day.
I saw several of those, but I haven't seen all of them. But the book is done, right?
It came out right when the state fair would have happened. It was like a mad rush to get it printed and for that time. But in the meantime, while I was doing that, I started doing a Transformers series. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? I'm like, why am I doing this? At the end of the day, after drawing state fair stuff, to keep my energy up, I just thought, wow, it'd be fun just to goof around and do something fun, like some kind of toy line. I started painting Transformers. So
And that got out of hand too.
I normally only do 32 paintings, and that one was like 40-something. Yeah, it got out of hand. And now I'm painting Ninja Turtles, so I needed a break. That's why I went to the woods. I pretty much went up there. I wasn't drawing. I wasn't doing anything art-wise. You know, I was reading books or comics, stuff like that, but I was purposely not drawing, just to rest and to kind of get some energy back up to want to, you know, it's not that I don't want to draw, but it's just, I was exhausted. So it's just the easiest thing to do.
When you said you were doing Motu and then Transformers and now Turtles, you have a series of mini books called Bootleg, where you're doing a whole series of paintings in a theme. You're then selling that with an individualized painting. In the first couple, it was in the back, but in the Transformers one, it was on like a separate sheet. But you basically get the whole book plus a painting. I have all of them, right?
So G.I. Joe, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Motu, and then Transformers.
So I have all four. You started with Joe last year.
Last November. So it'll be a year of me painting. I'm working on my fifth one right now. You're the actual one that you're like, hey, are you doing Jovember? And I was like, I don't want to do that. And I think it was a day that went by and I'm like, wait a minute, I want to do that. And I was like, well, what do I do? Because I can't remember. What was I working on? I don't know what I was working on.
That was last year, man. It's been 3 years since then.
Yeah. I think I just finished Purdy. Yeah, you're the one that brought it up to me. And then I was like, well, I'll do one painting. It always starts that way with me. You'll see a trend. I'll just do one, see what it's like. Oh, that was fun. I want to do another one. And then I'm 15, 20 in. And then it's like, this would make a nice booklet.
The Joe booklet was awesome because it was kind of a thing for Garrido. You were honoring Garrido with the book. It wasn't bootleg yet. So it was after Garrido.
You know, I delayed the thought of making that a book because I was honoring Garrido. You know, I was doing studies back when I got into collecting because I quickly found out why I like G.I. Joe better than anything else. It was because of the box art and the card art. It was far superior to any other of the toys. The card art for G.I. Joe was always, I'd always go in for one figure after watching the cartoon or something and being like, I want to get that figure. And then I'd be like, wait a minute, who's this guy? You know, Blowtorch, yellow and red, fire, or, you know, whatever it was, would always sway me. After I got into collecting again, I was always like, how come I never got Firefly? Firefly's so cool. And I always went in for him. And then I'd always get another figure because of the card art being very dynamic or colorful. Or whatever it was. When I was doing the paintings, I was doing studies before I even got to doing this booklet thing, just trying to figure out how Garrido worked, you know, how he applied this paint called gouache, because I recognized it right away when I got a couple of the card backs. It forced me to then start using gouache paint. So I'd do studies of his work in the same medium just to try and figure out. Because gouache paint is super difficult to use, a little maddening, I would say. So I just kind of did studies of his work like I would be if I was in Paris at a museum studying Monet or Degas or Picasso or whoever, you know, in oil. It was relaxing and fun to me to be able to just try and figure out how he worked. And in a weird way, you know, they say like when you study someone like that, at a certain point, it's almost like you're talking with them or you're having a conversation with them. And because you are figuring out, you're seeing brush strokes and you're seeing method and you're seeing how they're communicating color and composition and everything. So it's just, it's weird because I can see how people are thinking by breaking down their art in this manner. It made it cool because it flooded back better memories of when I was a kid. How it's supposed to be done is after you do a study of someone's work, you put after the artist. So people know that it's a copy or a study of their work. So I was always putting after Garrido and people were always asking, what does that mean? What's Garrido? I'd have to explain, this is the artist that did the original work. There was probably only 10 people that I talked to who actually knew. And they actually thanked me like, thanks for, you know, bringing his name out. when I did Jovember, I was just putting After Greedo on everything in red. So it really stood out because I was blatantly copying or studying his work.
Although you did remove the blast, which also meant you removed the color reflection.
I could paint the explosion because I got pretty good at doing it. When I was at Joe Fest 2019, someone had the original art of the torpedo. I saw the original artwork, and it's easier to do a study when you see the original art because you can see what paint is on top of what paint. And you can see that the process of how they worked and how they moved forward, and forward meaning the last touches of paint that are put on top, you can see like how they went about it in their process. So when I saw Garrido's original, I was pretty happy. I was like, I know exactly how he works. Because when you look at the printed version, it's all flat. So you can't see what's on top of what because it all kind of blends together. And I never thought at that point that I'd ever see an original Garrido, because I know that they're super rare. And most of them were painted over, which is a shame. At a certain point, they phased out Garrido. And or he painted over his own work because it was just like, hey, we're redoing the Dragonfly and here are the new color schemes. And they'd just paint it over and say, this guy's now in the pilot, you know, and they just paint over the original artwork. What a shame.
That's insanely heartbreaking.
Probably because the people that were painting over it, I don't know if Garrido did it. The people who painted over, I'd imagine, weren't as good of an artist as him. So it was easier just to paint over it, which, again, it's really hard because gouache paint, unless they use some, they can't use a sealant because there's no sealant to it. It reagitates when you wet it. So if you put a new coat of paint over the top of it, you have the possibility of reagitating the bottom layer. And if there's any layers beneath that, you'd reagitate that. And that's kind of the difficulty of using gouache at first, is just understanding how to go about layering the paint so it doesn't do that. The torpedo piece, it looks so good. And that was, I think, sent out to get painted over. And I don't remember what the story was, why it didn't.
But you got to put your hands on it.
I was like, can I take one photo of just, he goes, can't take a photo of it. It's not mine. I said, can I please take a photo of just this one section? It'll be up close. I just want it where the explosion is, just this little section right here. And he goes, okay. And so I took a photo of it.
You were jazzed when that happened, because I remember you came and showed me your phone.
Yeah, I was like, it was more confirmation of, you know, I understood how he worked. Because up to that point, I couldn't tell because, again, the card art, when you look at the printed form, it's all flat. So I have no idea how he's, in a sense, layering his paint. Where my photo, I could tell, you know, exactly how he layered his paint. And it was the exact same way I was doing it. I figured out his process.
Not a bad thing to figure out.
When you're doing studies of someone's work, you're just trying to understand problem solving and how they might have came about the illusion of what they did and how they achieved it. I see too many people just copying it to try and be somebody, and they totally miss the mark.
So you did the studies of Garrido. You got to see the original piece, which helped confirm and maybe tighten up a little bit. In Jovember, you were doing the After Garrido sort of homage. I mean, not sort of. It was an homage. When that was over, you decided to print it and then do some paintings in the back for people who wanted one. I think you did Roadblock for me and you did Sergeant Slaughter for A. Those have sold out. You can't get those today, right?
Correct.
Okay, so those are gone.
I was at my printer the other day and I saw they have three in a folder. They make them and as a, like a job ticket, they put however many in to say this is what the client signed off on these. This is our samples. I think three are still available if I go and pull them out.
After that was Star Wars. At that point, you renamed it Bootleg because it wasn't part of Jovember and it wasn't sort of an homage to anyone. You just wanted to do things that you don't own the rights to, which I thought Bootleg was kind of a cool moniker for you to do.
Well, with the Garrido book, I felt funny of like taking those and putting it in a book, even though everyone was asking, all right, what are you going to do with this? And so with the After Garrido book, I was more thinking like, okay, everyone's always asking me for original art. And they're always saying, oh, it's too expensive. So I figured if I sell it at an affordable price, the way I kind of justified it was you're buying the sketch and you're getting the booklet then for free.
Original art is expensive because original art takes an enormity of effort to make, and it's one of a kind. I think Star Wars, you did Thrawn for me, and then you did MOTU, which I got a Prince Adam from you. Super silly, childish Prince Adam. It was great.
Yeah, well, I did a kid version of Prince Adam.
Oh, I loved it.
That's the way I always thought that Prince Adam should have been done. I thought it should have been more like Shazam than Muscle Guy Prince Adam going to Muscle Guy He-Man. It would have been better if it was more fantasy of like, from a kid's perspective of like, I have the power and he holds up the sword, which is gigantic.
Superman took off glasses. He-Man took off a shirt.
I was going to say he kind of had the Clark Kent effect where he just changed his outfit and nobody recognized him.
I got those figures when my mom worked for Tomy. She did like, not toy displays, but like toy, I guess it's kind of like Costco or Sam's Club where, you know, you give samples, but you weren't giving samples of toys. It was more or less you're in the store and you're doing a display of toys and talking to people who are there, trying to get information from people like how they might like this line of toys. So she was always kind of in the know. She did that right before Christmas and, you know, after, probably just to raise money and to buy Christmas presents or whatnot. So there was a few years, like in the early 80s, that we just got toys and that I had no clue. I was like, what are these? These are awesome, but I didn't ask for this. And He-Man was one of them. And that was, I think it was 81 or 82 Christmas. I was just floored because we got Castle Grayskull, He-Man, Beastman, and Skeletor. And, I, you know, between me and my two other brothers. And I just remember laying on the floor looking at He-Man and Skeletor just being like, what the heck is this? You know, and these are, you know, I've never seen anything with muscles like that. And then what, like a year or two, when did the cartoon come out? 83, 84?
Something like that.
It was nothing like I imagined. I was like, what? I remember running home from school being like, hey, man, finally on. And then Skeletor and all the, you know, it's so bumbly and comedic. It's like, that's not how Skeletor was scary to me. And it's just like, he's not scary at all. And I kept trying to watch it. At a certain point, I stopped collecting He-Man.
I loved the cartoon and not the figures. I had the opposite effect.
Yeah, the opposite. Exactly.
Transformers, you did a big book of Transformers.
Yeah.
And you did Transformers Animated Bulkhead for me. So again, super cartoony, whereas everybody else is getting like cool angular Transformers, just like cool, big, muscly MOTU. I'm getting the goofy stuff from you. Are any of those still available?
I still have Transformers, like a few Transformers. The two things that I learned by doing these is, you know, I only offer them during pre-order. But I print over because I've learned from people who haven't heard about me or know about my art or whatever. Once people start getting them, they then say, hey, I saw this. I have just a short reserve, you know, like 10 over. And that's it.
Right now you're working on Turtles.
Each one of these toy lines, I'm viewing these as studying. It's how to apply paint. With G.I. Joe, it was I removed the explosion. It's easier to do the painting with the explosion. The problem with taking the explosion out is the image goes flat because it's losing all the reflective light of the explosion. And so it was the challenge of doing it with no explosion with a white background. So after that, then it was Star Wars, which it's kind of more science fiction and more trying to get the accuracy of the actors, but still keeping it vague and cartoonish. He-Man was the same thing as painting fantasy or a lot of skin and muscle. Transformers were painting robots. And now with Ninja Turtle, it's more animal type characters. Each one has its own set of difficulties. You know, eventually I'll stop doing this. I'm trying to get it to the point where it's I'm just going to paint my own stuff and original things. These are just fun. And it's fun to be able to do that and connect with people on something that we all share. Memories from our childhood, good times.
So speaking of all that, as we walk into November, are you going to get back to Jovember? Or are you going to just stick with the Turtles and not even touch Jovember?
No, I have to do something. G.I. Joe is my favorite. again, I thought like I'm not going to do it this year, but I have an idea. Last time I only did the carded figures from 82 to 84. I think this time I'm going to more focus on vehicles.
Well, this will publish on the 4th of November, so we will see if you stick with that or change or abandon it altogether.
That's my idea. I don't think I'm going to do the box art. That was kind of the problem of doing the After Greedo and naming it After Greedo, because that just became an homage to him and my thank you in a sense. The box art and seeing them as a kid planted the seed of me doing what I'm doing today. I really loved all that art and the toy line because of it. And I got into drawing comic books and now painting and doing this kind of stuff because of that. It was actually pretty cool because his granddaughter contacted me 2 weeks after he passed, and she came to my Facebook page and commented on there. Because I did like a painting of all the G.I. Joe lined up carrying the casket. You know, they were all lined up on both sides and 8 members were carrying the casket, and he had the eagle flying over the top and all the American flags blowing and the Argentina flag. He was born in Argentina. So his granddaughter contacted me and was like, you know, thank me. And we started talking, and I ended up sending her the original art for the cover of After Greedo, which was the portrait of him with the explosion in the background. And then that piece, which is for his passing. She's getting it framed, and she said she'd give me a picture of it when it was framed.
That's awesome. I knew that you had talked to her, but I didn't realize that you had sent her those 2 pieces. That's really special.
Yeah. To me, it's like I wasn't going to sell them. You know, I had a bunch of people asking to buy them, and I said they're not for sale. They weren't made for sale. There's too much emotion into them. It was just a no-brainer. I just said, what's your address? I want to send you one of these booklets. And she was like, okay, great. And she told me that he actually got one of, I think, Carson from...
Metaxas?
Yeah. I think he knew Greedo's old agent. And so he sent him a couple booklets. And I think the old agent gave him a booklet. And I talked with her and she confirmed. She goes, yeah, he got it. And he was really pleased that someone, you know, remembered him, kind of thing. Because he, I wouldn't say cut ties, it just moved on with his life and didn't think anyone ever would remember him from the work that he did, you know, what, 30 years ago?
He did book covers. He did not just toys, but like books and a ton of stuff. Yeah.
Well, he did that before.
Yeah.
I think he did more religious stuff after. I saw some of his stuff like, you know, Mary, I think kind of Catholic type painted plates and stuff like that. But yeah, she said he was really touched by the booklet. So that made me feel good because I was pretty bummed out. In the back of my head, I was like, oh, it'd be nice to meet him someday. It would have been cool to meet him. But like I said, I already had conversations with him. Not conversations of me going, hey, how you doing while I'm painting, but...
With his thoughts and his process, yes.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. I can't remember which artist said that. I was reading, you know, when I was over in Paris, you know, I was reading a lot of biographies and stuff, trying to figure out like how those guys worked, trying to crack a code. It's all the same method that they used. And I could tell when I was in the museums and, you know, some of the museums had sketchbooks and that were under glass. And it's just like, oh, can you please turn that page? I just want to see what's on the next page. But I cracked the code when I was over there. It was kind of like a snowballing effect. So I'm pretty sensitive to that work method. So when I see certain artists that I know it, it just kind of, I guess it's a language. It's just not making art. You're working within the language of how you're applying composition, color, all the theories. It becomes interesting. I don't know if this is interesting to listen to, but I could ramble on and on and on about that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool.
You and I have talked about this at length over the last couple of years more than once. For me, this is fantastic because I enjoy this topic. I enjoy this talk. I think where we were going was more of touching on the bootleg series and then jumping back to You Were in the Woods. But since you went down this whole road, we've just been quietly enjoying. So thanks. I mean, we're just here to BS. But I think anybody that doesn't know that process as a layman or as intimately like you do, it's wildly interesting. And then even we have personally had this conversation more than once, and yet it's still interesting to have it again and again. This is fun.
It's interesting to me. You know, once you start learning about this stuff, someone just posted today when I posted my latest painting, it's, how the heck do you do this? You're doing this every single day and I don't understand. And it's like, well, I do this. This is my job and this is what I do. I'm just not screwing around and saying, oh, I got to go up and do that one painting.
I mean, yeah, this is the mortgage.
Yeah. It's like I'm working all day, every day, every single day. You know, Stephen King, you know, he's got a cool book, if you like his work or not.
On Writing.
Yeah, On Writing is great. He tells stories of other writers, of this one guy who would get up every morning and he'd just continue off from where he stopped yesterday before he had to go to work. And he'd just start typing the story wherever he's ended on the whatever word he ended. And as soon as he got to the point where he had to get up and go to work, he just got up and left. And then the next day he would sit down at the same exact word that he left off and he'd start typing again. And just like, that's all he did every single day. And he cranked out books, you know?
King also said that because of his routine, he was creative every morning at 9 a.m. or some shit like that.
He said he works 3 to 4 hours every single day, even on Sundays and holidays. But he tells people that he takes those days off, but he's lying to them because he wants to seem somewhat normal. And I do the same thing. You want to tell people how hard you work, but it's just 16 hours a day. You know, do you really want to? It becomes fun at a certain point. It wasn't fun before because I didn't know what I was doing. What led me to France was a car accident. So the thing that I didn't want to have happen to me, but it put me on a different path that made me go to where I am today. There was a year of me not doing anything at all and recovering. And I kept thinking, like, why is this happening to me? Why did I go through this? Why do I have to go through this? Why couldn't it be somebody else? You know, and I had to change my mindset to being more accepting to it. And when I went to France, I remember every single time I think of France, I had to carry all my stuff with me through the airport. And then I didn't know France at all, but I had to make it to this location. And I was carrying a big backpack, which I had all my painting supplies and everything in because I was going to, you know, be a painter there. And I had my big luggage and my small luggage and probably some other satchel type thing. So I was pretty loaded up. And when you go into the terminals for the subway, they have like elevator door type clear door that, you know, you do your pass. So it opens up the first door and you go into this little chamber that has then a second door. The doors that you went through close and then the next doors in front of you open so you can go through. And it's kind of probably like a measure just to keep tons of people going through it, you know, and running like a scam, getting a free pass. So I went through, but I went through too slow and the back door closed on my arm and my backpack that was holding the larger luggage behind me, trailing me, and it closed on my backpack. And I was just stuck in that thing. And I'm like, how the heck am I going to get out of this? I couldn't go back through and redo my pass because it was on the outside. And I'm stuck in this room. People were passing by me, looking at me and just shaking their head like, what an idiot. And that's what I think about of like France is just like, how am I going to get out of this? This one guy came and he had pity. He was just like sighing and just being like, ugh. He waved his pass over it and it opened up the door and I got my backpack out and I started bringing and then it closed on my large luggage again. And he was just like, oh my gosh, what a dope. And you have to wait like a minute before you can use a pass again. Because again, another measure, because they run so many scams there of like people getting through and letting friends go through. So you're not paying full price. And so he had to wait there for me, you know, wait for his thing to go through like a full cycle so he could use it again. And then he did it. And then I got it through. I was like, thank you. And he was shaking his head. And then he had to wait for his pass to redo it again so he could go through. Fun times.
Out of that came Musnay, which I adore.
Yeah. Going through the stuff that I've gone through, it just put me in a different position. And because it wasn't enjoyable before. I would say I was probably miserable because I knew I wasn't doing something right, or I was always questioning myself, and there was pride of working and pride of, you know, making something good, but it wasn't enjoyable, you know, because I didn't think I was going to be able to draw again because I couldn't stand and I couldn't sit how my hips were hurt. And the point of my back, my upper back that was hurt on my spine, led down my drawing arm. So I couldn't put pressure on my forearm to rest like you, if you were to draw with your wrist. So I couldn't draw or ink with my right arm. So I just thought that was going to be the rest of my life, but I'm better now. So it's more enjoyable, I would say.
So while you were in the woods, did you do any drawing or painting out there?
I wanted to. I'm always looking. I'm always thinking. You know, if I'm not painting or drawing literally, I'm doing it in my head. So I'm trying to figure it out. You know, Degas, he's probably one of my favorite French artists, painters. You know, he's kind of complete. He sculpted, he painted, he drew, he could do everything. There's a story of this guy that he wanted to learn this method of drawing from, and it was more based on memory. Degas said if he had a school for teaching, he would have it so the thing that you'd be drawing would be on the base floor, but all your drawing stuff is on the fifth or sixth floor. So you'd have to come down and look at the thing that you're drawing and then go up six flights of stairs or whatever and then draw it from memory. And then if you have to remember, you'd have to go back down, look at it again really good, and then go back up and draw it. He did things. There's like a story of him in a train and these students were with them and they challenged him. They went past something that was pretty famous looking and they said, could you draw that based on memory? He sat there and drew it and it looked exactly the way it looked. He got this method from I'm losing all my stories kind of from those things. I know where I read it from, so I could go back and read, but he wanted to learn from this other artist that taught this thing, but he was too well known. So he paid a student to go and take this class and then come back and report to him so he could learn this method and not let it be known that he was learning this method. I don't know why I told that story, but it has something to do with it.
I wonder if he was using more of like the whole memory palace, ad hernium sort of thing. But instead of remembering names and faces and speeches, he was doing it to remember objects for painting.
And that's why I was saying it, because it's like in the woods, you try and remember things. You know, you try and use your memory, especially if you're going to make things from your imagination. A lot of it stems from memory or lack thereof, right? And that kind of stems back to Eddie Van Halen. What I was listening to with him, he said something in there where he's a tone chaser, he said. He's not after perfection. He's after trying to find something new and how to create something new. But he was also super classically trained by his father, he and his brother. His dad was a master musician too, going from that to then playing rock and roll. Every single time I listen to Van Halen or listen to him play guitar or any of the instruments that he, you know, was composing or coming up with, I could hear all the classical music.
While you were in the woods, you said you were reading comics. What are you reading?
You know, I always have Kirby, Jack Kirby stuff. He's the best when it comes to superhero or any kind of comic book stuff like that. I got this one series I've been hearing about forever, and I finally just found a set on eBay. It's called Atari Force. It's pretty cool. I think it's 20-issue set. It's by Jerry Conway, Roy Thomas, and Jose Garcia Lopez. I thought Ross Andrew did penciling, but I might be wrong.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah, they're really cool. Super well done.
What year?
It has those toys. What are they? The Power Lord toys on the back cover. So I think it's got to be early 80s. Because I think those Power Lords came out this says it's 1983 and this is issue 2. It's really cool. You can see Jim Lee, his Wildcat stuff. The main girl that's in it, you can tell Jim Lee totally ripped him off. Zealot, the girl in Wildcats.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
It's really cool looking. Great space stuff. There's this French artist, Paul Gion, that he did a series, I'm blanking on the name, but all this Atari Force is influenced by his series of French science fiction comics.
That is interesting. I'll have to see if there's like a trade or something.
No, there's no trade. You have to buy the single copy. And again, I bought two sets, and the first one was like 2 through 4 and, you know, issues 9 and 10. And the other set that I bought was like 11 through 20. So I'm missing issue 18 and 8. So I'll have to kind of track those down at some point.
I just finished the latest Dresden Files, and then I went into the Mobile Suit Gundam manga series. So I've been reading through that. I'm 4 or 5 in. I've been really enjoying that.
So you're getting like the big, huge collections?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are awesome.
It's easier to put a trade on my bookshelf. After I sold off all my long boxes, it's just hard to get back into having stacks of floppies all over the place.
Is that by Viz? Who does that?
I don't know, because they're in A's room and he's asleep. I'll send you a picture tomorrow.
No, I have them. I just couldn't remember. No, that's by Vertical.
Might have been.
They do a good job, and so does Viz.
So I don't know which Gundam subline you have. I'm doing Mobile Suit Gundam, which starting with...
The Origin?
Yes, that. That's the series that I'm reading. I think there's 12 or 14 of them, and I'm about 5 or 6 in.
Yeah, they're awesome. I love the fact that they put the color in the beginnings of them.
Yeah, and at the beginning of each section.
Yeah, and then it just goes to black and white, which again, it gives you enough like color to be like, this is what it looks like. And then when they switch to black and white, you can just imagine what the rest looks like. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's easy to keep it all in mind.
Have you read the Battle Angel Alita, the mangas?
I haven't read the mangas. I remember the original anime, but I haven't sat down with the mangas. Are they good?
Yeah, they're really good. They put out like a 6-volume set, like a box set. They're a little bit bigger too, so they're kind of almost like American-sized graphic novels.
I picked up Captain Harlock. The environments and the ships, all the mechanical stuff is really well done, but the figures are so... ugh. I couldn't get far into it. Like, I love the anime, but I couldn't get into the manga because it's not like they reserved that goofy character style for like 1 or 2 characters or for the kids. Or if you look at like Space Battleship Yamato, the doctor, everybody is like that. It threw me off, and I couldn't get much more than about 15 pages in.
Well, it's because there's like a background artist and a zip-a-tone artist and a lettering artist. And, you know, they have like a team. And it's rare that sometimes the artist does everything.
Which the Mobile Suit Gundam, that artist is doing almost all of it. I think he has an assistant, but it's him.
He might have an assistant to help with Zipitone, like the shading, the right. Gray shading and or, you know, letterist and colorist kind of stuff. But for the most part, it looks like he's doing all the inked and drawn stuff. It helps.
I know we went off in a very artistic direction. And so Joel has been quiet this whole time. Have you been getting any toys lately?
You know, I've been collecting the newer Motu figures that Mattel's been putting out. Those are really cool. I got a couple of the 6-inch G.I. Joe figures that they put out.
You're not grabbing that whole line, are you?
No. All I've gotten so far is Destro and Snake Eyes.
Ask, because like Joel, you've gotten a big thing in lately.
I did a big swap with a buddy that took a couple of years in the making just to cross paths. I'll probably save a little bit more of that detail to where I have it written down, so I'm recalling from memory. But say I went into a Walmart looking for the retro line. They have their own like multi-scale line of vehicles called Adventure Force. And they do all sorts of things. Like they have like 1/18 scale, like Jeeps that tow boats and like all this other stuff. Most of the quality on that is like a little too low for me to be interested in buying. But I mean, the price point is where it should be for the appearance.
And you're also into all those German vehicles. So you can't really mess with Schleich.
I'm also heavy into Schleich and Bruder. So, you know, when you put these next to each other, it's like not even comparable, but... Their 1/18 scale motorcycles are amazing. They work well with O-Ring and Modern Joes. I mean, they're never going to be perfect because neither Modern or Vintage G.I. Joes are actually truly in a 1/18 scale. And then obviously the size, like if they made a Sky Striker actually in 1/18 scale, it would be significantly bigger than the Sky Striker we got in both vintage and modern. But all that rambling to just say I stumbled into like three fresh cases of motorcycles and just bought everything that wasn't like a Harley knockoff. I mean, the other thing is they're actually real motorbikes and dirt bikes. And they're like $3 or $4. So if you're looking for 1/18 scale motorcycles, check your Walmart. They're in a blue box that says Adventure Force. They're good. They have street bikes, you know, Harley Davidson style, dirt bikes, whatever. That's basically all I can remember off the top of my head because it's been a crazy couple of weeks for me.
So you can gear out all of your dreadnoughts, or if they're you can start looking at Adventure Team stuff.
So I already have motorcycles for all my dreadnoughts. So these are just more or less that curse I have of if I see anything 1/18 scale, I pretty much have to at least consider buying it. But
wasn't Adventure Force, there's one that I keep seeing, it's that ginormous, big, huge plane.
The C-130 bomber?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, it was True Heroes, and then it was True also, Heroes. It's back with a different brand name in Target now, where when it was in, it's all made by Chap May, but when it was in Toys R Us, it was True Heroes, T-R-U Heroes. And now it might be called like Heroes One, or it's all basically just like word diarrhea of like, yeah, the word Heroes swashed around with different variations. I have a couple of those from Toys R Us. I just haven't got around to opening them because they're huge and like I'm out of space.
Yeah, those things look cool whenever I see them. I think you can actually put vehicles in it.
You can fit, I believe, a Vamp and anything smaller. I think the Vamp is the cutoff.
I didn't know all that.
The one that's at Toys R Us now is, I believe it's in like a weird gray. I mean, it's still military-esque, but it's sharp. I have two of the green ones. And like I said, I have nowhere to put it outside of the box. So I can't justify buying a third one in a different color because I just have nowhere to put it.
And it's affordable, isn't it?
It's around like $45 to $50, which for the size of it, I think is more than fair. It comes with a bunch of stuff that for adult collectors is throwaway, but for the average kid, and I stress the word average, you know, it comes with like two or three or four action figures and a bunch of accessories. So, you know, A's not going to be impressed with the New Heroes figures because he's blessed by having the opinion of real action figures. So,
yeah, he's already seen those. He's not impressed. This isn't an exaggeration. I talked to Joel and you more than pretty much anybody else. Because, I mean, between the three of us, I'm talking to one of the two of you every, if not every day, then every couple days. Everything you talk about tonight, stuff that you and I have had private conversations about, but it's great.
All I do, you know, it's all the information. I'm losing story from more of the French side or all my stories from those artists because I'm replacing it with remembering all the Transformers names and He-Man and, you know, G.I. Joe names. It's just like, I only have a certain bandwidth. I'm like, I know I have this story, but I can't remember those artists' names now because I know full run of G.I. Joe vehicle and character names.
Yeah, there's a P somebody for a painter. I don't know. But hey, have you seen this Flash? I don't know if you guys can always hear these vehicles passing by, but a lot of my long pauses are vehicles.
I don't know, too. It's like I've been sketching because you said it. There's no video. So I'm like, well, I don't need to look at the camera, so I'm sitting here sketching the whole time.
That's what you do when we're on the phone anyway.
I'll take this whole sheet that I filled up. We can post it.
I think the next time you're on here, I might bring up some of your original stuff.
That's kind of been on hold for a year because, you know, I'm going to get back into it.
I was thinking about him being stuck in this clear chamber.
Yeah. Funny because it's like I keep thinking about that. Any single time I bring up France, I think of like, that's right. I don't know how long I was stuck in that thing either. It had to be a good 10 minutes before the guy helped me out. I'm like, really? I'm like, I can't get out.
Surely you're not the first person who got stuck in that.
Yeah, but I must have looked pretty pitiful because it's funny. I'll have to draw it on the drawing thing here of what it looks like because it's pretty funny.
I mean, that's a wild system. And seriously, you couldn't have been the first person to have been trapped like that.
They didn't have a failsafe. I mean, or like, at least, like, if something's caught.
My arm was stuck in it, and I couldn't move forward or backward. It wouldn't open. Yeah, you would think it would open back up if you get stuck in it, but
truly insane. And that's all I could picture after, and I'm just like, what a hellscape to be stuck in.
I started laughing at a certain point because I'm just like, this feels like a nightmare. And then, you know, I was going through the French. I had no clue. I was like, I'm going to have to figure out how to get to this place. And I have no clue where I am. No directions. My phone didn't work down there. And I'm like, well, I have all day. And I tried to keep a positive. That whole trip, I was like, okay, this is going to be like that episode in Seinfeld where George Costanza was like, I'm going to do the opposite of what I normally do. I'm going to have the exact opposite. Normally, I get frustrated or be angry or, you know, let it get to me. And this one, I'm going to be like complete opposite. You know, I ended up making it to the place where I needed to. Their subway system there is amazing. It's super intuitive and simple.
Let me just add, I'm going to ask you your favorite Cobra and your favorite Joe. We'll just edit that in there at some point, and then I got to dip out.
Okay. I'd go 82 Snake Eyes. That was my first figure. Even though I agree with most people when they say 85 Snake Eyes with the wolf is the better Snake Eyes, it just, when I got that Snake Eyes, so I picked Snake Eyes, my brother picked Flash, and my youngest brother got the Cobra Trooper. Cobra, favorite Cobra. That's going to be tough. It's in between Major Blood and the Baroness. And I'd probably go, I don't know, it's tough. So when I got back into collecting, I went to a place in Appleton that has retro toys. And I went in there because I was watching Retro Blasting on YouTube. My kids were sick. So we went in there and I said, let's go and look at these toys we've been looking at for a week. They had a Major Blood, which I never had as a kid, but I saw his mech arm, which I think it's a mech arm, you know, the way it's designed. And I talked to Ron Rudat, and he was like, I'm pretty sure it's a mech arm, but don't tell anybody, you know, because it's pretty controversial. But when I saw that, I was like, I've never noticed this before. And it's stiff. It's not, it doesn't have a joint on it. So it was like even cooler that it had, it was just one point articulation on the arm. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. I didn't buy it. So the next day, I think it was like Christmas. And so all I could think about was that dumb toy. And I'm like, why am I thinking about this toy? I'm 40 years old. Went back the next day, bought it. And then I bought a couple Star Wars figures. So I don't know. It's like, I think I'd have to go with Major Blood. But I really do love the Baroness.
I actually prefer the goggle head of Snake Eyes too. So it made me very happy when you picked the OG Snake Eyes. I do think the visor is cool, but I love the goggles with the little face mask with the breather holes. I think it's it's just such a tough design. To me, it's more intimidating than the visor. And I do, I love the visor, but there's just something, like if you saw Snake Eyes with the goggles and the breather holes, just you could barely see him coming out of the shadows, like... I mean, I guess I would probably be just as disturbed if I saw a knight's visor, you know, peeking out of the dark as well. But
the simplicity of the design and then hearing the lore of it, the key with what worked with all these old toys and what doesn't really work so much with the newer toys nowadays, I think, is the vagueness of detail. You know, it's the same thing in painting or any kind of art. The more vague something, the more stronger it is. And the more that, you know, people can put their own imagination into it. And some of the toys, you know, McFarlane or whatever, super detailed and super articulate and all this stuff, there's no room for imagination at all because it's all there. So I think with a lot of these older toys, there's so much room for imagination that you put in. It's kind of the key. And I think with the original Snake Eyes, I think it's just that. The second Snake Eyes is such a cool toy. You know, I understand what people like about it, but it's the first figure that I got. And even now, because I never read the comic when I was a kid, and you know, I've been reading it ever since I got back into it. It's so good. I like Snake Eyes better as a commando too, not so much a ninja. I understand why they went that route, but a commando is pretty cool.
I also think, you know, getting it in your situation in 82 just plopped on you. There's not much to explain who anybody was, let alone a guy that's just completely black. It comes with an Uzi, yeah. You know, it's just, there's so much, like you said, just kind of you build. I mean, that's how I played as a kid. I didn't have, I mean, I'm younger, so I have a different, you know, my introduction to G.I. Joe is an entirely different introduction. I got a lot of yard sale stuff and hand-me-down stuff. So it's like, I had no idea what half the stuff was. I just, whatever, you know, the figure called to me was the storyline I created. And I would have multiple day play stories in my brain. And I had no idea who any of these guys were. You know, it's just, you know, I had Cobra guys on the Joe side, Joe sides on the Cobra side. Like, I had nobody to tell me what to do with it. And Snake Eyes is the perfect example. It's a shadow, you know, a shadow with goggles and an Uzi.
Within the comic and the whole lure of him of like making him silent on top of that, that he doesn't talk. And the mystery of like, yeah, who is the guy who's behind a mask? And he's a good guy and he's dressed in all black. I don't think G.I. Joe would have worked if it didn't have that character. I don't think it would have been as successful. I'm sure Larry, you know, would have did a good job with all the rest of them, but I think Snake Eyes is kind of the secret magic sauce of the whole, what made it all stick. He's the cool, like the mystery factor, what's going on. Larry ran with that. That whole silent issue is what brought it way up. I don't know. What do you think? Get rid of Snake Eyes, does G.I. Joe work?
I mean, like Snake Eyes is clearly, time tells us. I mean, I'm holding up a sticker pack from 2020, front and center is Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes works with him not speaking. He is our entry because everything has to be explained because he can't talk. He's the entry for the reader or the watcher. I mean, that's why he works so well. I mean, yes, everything else, but in terms of storytelling, he's a device for us.
Also saying that because he has the mask, he's every kid, right? Doesn't matter, white, black, whatever.
True.
The brilliance of that series is, you know, you had a woman on the team, you had an African-American man, multiple, you know, Asian, you know, but that first line, the diversity right off the bat, so cool.
Actually, what I was going to chime in with is I believe Larry is quoted in saying that the magic of Snake Eyes is anybody can be Snake Eyes because you don't know the voice.
Yep.
And in the beginning, you had no idea what was under the mask other than horrific scarring. To comment on the diversity side of it, it's like Hasbro got so lucky finding Larry, who is a minority himself, to write and craft this story where he mixed in, you know, his own real world experiences. There's everything that he had to deal with in his own life. And then he's retelling stories that he experienced and marketing it into like an amazing story that anyone can read and enjoy, regardless of where you come from.
So I was at New York Comic Con. I think Purdy 1 just came out. You know, I normally get at these shows early so I can walk the floor with nobody around so I can see what's there if I find something like a book or a toy or whatever, or, you know. And so I was like, I'll go downstairs and see who's in Artist Alley. I walked by and I saw Larry Hama sitting there with his coffee and a donut. And I just started reading G.I. Joe. I stopped. I walked by him and I stopped. I'm like, I got to go back and say something to him because I might not see him again. I don't know if I'm going to come to New York or again, or, you know, or if I'm going to be at the same show with him. But I'm like, he's about to eat. I can tell he's about to eat. I saw him sit down. He's taking off his jacket. He's got his hot coffee and he's going to eat that donut. I'm like, I don't want to interrupt him. I really know nothing about him personally. I got to go and say hi. So I went over. I wasn't thinking like, what am I going to say? And that's kind of what happened as I was like, hi, Mr. Hama. And then I'm thinking like, what am I going to say? Like, I have like an internal dialogue going on and what I'm trying to have come out my mouth. And he's looking at me like, yeah. And I'm like, oh no, this is going bad. Cause I'm thinking about what I'm saying. I'm like, hey, you got to say something. Cause you just stand there looking at him and he's waiting for some kind of response. And I'm like, I can't really say, hey, I love your work. You know, I was trying to figure out how to say it because I'm like, well, I can't say, hey, I just started reading G.I. Joe, you know, but I'm a big fan of your work. I stumbled through it. And then, you know, I just was like, well, I want to say, hey. He's like, okay, yeah. Then I was like, I'll let you get back to eating. I can't remember what I said. I just was like stumbling like I am now. And I'm like, oh, geez, what did I stop for? And I'm like, what the heck was I thinking? He's a really good writer. He's a really good creator. He's very smart. Doesn't play down to kids. He just writes a good story. So I don't want to discredit them, like what I was saying before with no snake eyes. I don't think G.I. Joe would have worked. It was still would have been good in what he would have wrote, but that's a gift, right? That snake eyes character and what he came up with and the whole silent thing and just the mystery behind it. What a gift.
Who would have thought that that would be the character that ultimately surpassed everybody else in the brand and is like, realistically, the face of G.I. Joe has never spoken a word. And that's amazing. That's truly amazing. But all right, I should probably hop off.
I drew me stuck in the...
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, as hell yeah as I can celebrate you being stuck in this hellscape, but...
It was worse than that. I was...
I look forward to seeing the scanned in version of that.
All right, let's cut it here. So this has been a really fun conversation for us. If you want to be a part of that conversation, you can always reach out. We're at orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. On Twitter, it's orderofbattlepd. And Instagram is @orderofbattlepod. You can find Kickley in the Facebook groups. Posts a lot of art to his own timeline. He's also on Instagram and Twitter @Kickley. Remember, that's Kick, L-I-Y. Thanks again for joining us, Kick. We enjoyed having you. Thank all of you for listening. This has been The Order of Battle.
I do have one question for you.
Hit me.
What was so important that you didn't go to the toy thing?
It was just too far away.
You could have taken a plane.
Well, it's a little tricky right now with everything going on.
Well, yeah, but how long would it take?